If amateurism is the problem, why is the NCAA so committed to it?
Because for the NCAA, amateurism isn't simply a rule that says players shouldn't be paid for their athletic talents.
Only a game's Karen Given.
For the NCAA, amateurism is a philosophy. It's a moral code. Listen to this.
My father sent me to Rutgers, and resolved that I should be a man.
Rutgers University changed the opening words to its alma mater in 2013, but until then, this is how it started. My father sent me to old Rutgers and resolved that I should be a man. And football was considered to be a big part of that education. I want to start with something that happened in 1892, or I should say allegedly happened in 1892. In a game against Princeton, a Rutgers player named Pop Grant broke his leg. While he was being carted off the field, Grant turned to his teammates and, the legend goes, said, "I'd die for dear old Rutgers." And that phrase became a thing.
This was a trope that was trotted out to sort of exemplify this college rah-rah spirit of boys out there just playing for the school, just playing for the alma mater, even willing to die for the school if that's what it took.
That's Paul Potts. He studies the intersection of sports and Christianity at Baylor University. This devotion to amateur sports can be traced back to something called muscular Christianity. It started in England during the Industrial Revolution. The idea was life was getting too easy for the middle and upper classes. Their bodies were getting weak.
And meanwhile, lots of lower class people are building up strength. They're becoming muscular.
Basically, those in power wanted to make sure they stayed in power.
So it's very closely tied with class and with race and imperialism in the 19th century.
Muscular Christians took their cues from a fictional English schoolboy named Tom Brown.
He's really a hero for people like Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, that Teddy Roosevelt. So here's Roosevelt. He wants to build leaders, and he's part of this movement that says leaders need to be strong not just mentally, but also physically. And that's where football comes in. Football was only for amateurs. And in a way, this answers the biggest question of all.
Why in the world would we have football be a part of a college? What does that have to do with education? Well, if it's an amateur sport and if it's actually forming men in a moral way, providing a moral education, then you can justify it.
And something happened in the United States that didn't happen anywhere else. By the 1890s, college football had become a moneymaker, and it created something that you don't find anywhere else in the world, this industry of big-time college sports. But the rule that said athletes couldn't make any money, it didn't apply to the schools or the coaches.
They're not going to die for dear old Rutgers. They're going to whatever school gives them the higher price. So the money that supposedly corrupts these young people, when it applies to the schools and to the coaches, the rules don't apply here.
Later, schools would say that the purpose behind amateurism was to maintain parity, make it so that rich schools couldn't buy championships. But originally, this is what it was all about, creating this division between upper-class sports played in service of a moral education and lower-class sports played for pay. Over time, football became more democratic, and teams brought in players who weren't part of the elite. But every time a school would start to relax or sidestep the rules so that more people could afford to play, Paul Putt says the defenders of amateurism would step in.
And I think a lot of it has to do with feeling that their world, their supremacy is being encroached upon because it's shot through with class-based assumptions, with sort of an opposition to the working class people who can't play sports if they aren't getting scholarships.
A lot of things have changed since then, and now sports are seen as a way for kids to get a college education. But the so-called purity of amateurism is still the NCAA's excuse for limiting players' compensation and the university's responsibility.
And that's what leads to mini golf courses and fraud schemes.
Exactly.